Welcome and thank you for joining us on the WebTalk Guys radio show. And my name is Rob Greenlee.
And you're looking pretty fine there, Rob.
Well, you are too.
Oh, thank you. This is Web Girl Dana. We're back again this week, and we want to encourage you all to go check out WebTalkGuys.com if you're not already there. We have a new blog up, so please go click on that and see what we're doing between shows.
Mm-hmm. We've got a terrific show lined up for everybody out there. We're going to be speaking with Google. We know how important Google is to all of our online lives. But what we're going to drill down on today is the Google's AdWords sponsored links program, as they are doing a lot of cool things with that program to actually make search engines profitable out there and make themselves profitable specifically. We're going to be speaking with David Fisher, who is the U.S. manager of AdWords at Google. And he's going to tell us some terrific tips on how to use a sponsored links program to get some results for your website.
There are a lot of folks out there who want their results to show up on Google, and if you can't pay your way into the search results, we're interested in figuring a way when they could get some space on the page and advertise their product. So out of that, we've created the AdWords program. And so what we like to say is, well, you can't buy your way into our search results, but you can buy your way into advertising.
Rob, we were having a discussion earlier today about content and this whole way of distributing interesting information, whether it's TV or radio or something online. And you kind of hit on some key interesting points. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Well, certainly the changes that are happening, I think, to media just in general, and it's specifically digital media, are being affected by the internet in a tremendous way, because people are looking at digital media in more of an on-demand format. And so I think what we're seeing is, as our show is a perfect example, more people are looking at audio and video content on demand 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I think that the model that we're seeing right now out there on television is, you know, this show is going to be on 8 p.m. on Thursday night, and you have to be sitting at the couch in front of your television to watch that right at that moment, or else you're going to miss it.
Now, we all know the whole TiVo and the VCR thing have been around forever, and everybody knows that they can do on-demand on their own.
Yeah.
But I think the interesting point you put out was how it should be viewed from the content provider's point of view. Not that the consumer, me, the couch potato, you know, having to make that decision, taking time to set a recorder, but how the producers of Friends or ER should view it, or HBO. Now, what were your ideas on that?
Well, it's kind of a two-pronged thing. I think a content producer can actually get more value out of their show by making it available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as a download, not as a broadcast, per se. Just like when you go to WebTalkGuys.com right now and you can download our MP3 player and listen to our show in your pocket PC, or download a Windows Media Format file that you can load into a portable device, it's the same model that I think is an opportunity for television broadcasters or other radio broadcasters, is to distribute their content directly when that listener wants to get it. And they can watch it when they want to, because, I mean, how many people, we do the same thing. We record television shows on our VCR all the time and then watch it when we want to. Well, I think digital media is going to make all media that way, I think, in the long run. And I think it's terrific for the viewer, and it's great for the content provider.
Oh, and it's great for the advertisers, because really, what is television or radio except a venue to attract you to listen to ads, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
We may not like it as a listener, but that's what drives the whole momentum of those mediums. So if I were like Ford Motor Company and I was buying time on Friends, do I really only want that ad available, by the way, which I'm paying probably thousands and thousands of dollars, to be seen once at 8:05 p.m. once a week, when it can be seen at any time without, you know, the need of TiVos or VCRs? And I think another interesting scenario that we were talking about was, let's look at something like subscription television like HBO. Now, when you turn on the TV and you enter the number for HBO, you're in the middle of some program.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe instead of seeing any kind of movement, any kind of video, it's a catalog. It becomes a catalog. You turn on HBO, there's a list of all the HBO shows. Every kind of show there is, nothing is actually on at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you click on, or you point your remote, or you dial in that number for Sopranos, and Sopranos starts.
Mm-hmm.
And all of television should just be a catalog. ABC, catalog. NBC, catalog. And I guess eventually do away with the networks, and the producers of the actual programs go directly to the listener or to the viewer. Yeah. And you just turn on TV and you see a catalog of every program.
Well, exactly. I mean, look at the show like American Idol. I think that has such a following out there that if they made every episode of that show available off of a digital download, mm-hmm. the people would be watching shows from 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. They'd be watching shows, I mean, the most current show. Mm-hmm. They would obviously watch the most because they want to see what's happened. But they could also go back and watch the episode 3 weeks ago when a contestant, you know, had a great performance mm-hmm. of his singing. And there's just such great sure. opportunity. Now, I also see kind of two models there. You've got a free distribution on download, or, you know, it can be just part of a bigger subscription, almost like cable television, but almost having a direct subscription with that particular show is another model. And maybe that subscription is less than what it would cost to maybe join mm-hmm. the subscription at HBO. Mm-hmm. But maybe there's also a place for free download too. I mean, if you're willing to download a friend show, let's say, that has all of the commercials already embedded in there and they haven't been removed.
That's free.
And you have to watch those commercials if the technology can be developed mm-hmm. where you can't fast forward through those commercials, then it would make sense probably for the content producer or the distribution network to actually make those shows available in a digital forum for free. Now, if a person wants to subscribe, then maybe they can subscribe to a version of the show that maybe has limited commercial placement and maybe has just product placement.
It's brilliant. And I think that would work for the people that need to make money that are producing the content. You know, what we're really saying here is nothing new. It's happening right now on Kazaa and was happening on Napster. What we're saying that's a little different is that it's time for the content providers to embrace that instead yeah. of fight it like Mr. RIAA head, you know, that hates all these file swapping. Well, the file swapping exists because that's what the consumer wants. And it's time to just find out a way to make that work business-wise.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things that's holding it back is people are concerned about the distribution of that digital file. So when a person downloads it into their set-top box or their computer, that they can take that file and give it to their friend. Yeah. Well, there's going to be some technology, and I think it exists today, that limits the use of that file. I mean, it can only be played from that particular device.
Yeah, that's true. It's like software.
Yeah, and it's just like TV right now, but people right now can actually record a friend show or whatever and then encode it into a streaming media format and distribute it just as freely as ever before.
I don't think it even applies in a way that the whole rationale or argument with video or television, because that is free. I mean, I'm taking out all paid cable. That's free anyway. What do they care if Friends gets sent around to a bunch of people? Because it's going with the commercials, and those producers of Friends get paid by the commercials.
Yeah.
So it's not like impacting their pocketbook anyway. It's actually helping more distribution for their advertisers instead of the stupid paradigm where you have to be there at 8 o'clock on Thursday night to see that show.
Yeah. Dana, I don't know about you, but I definitely want to get a life and be able to live my life and do the things that I want to do when I want to do it and not be controlled because I'm a fan of a particular show. Yeah. And I do know that at the Consumer Electronics Show this past year, there was some new electronic digital video players that are coming out on the market this coming year that will be a lot like a Pocket PC, but their whole design is to play digital video. That's their whole purpose mm-hmm. is to just do that. Now, you can play digital video on a Pocket PC right now, and that's probably the best value right now if you want to play digital videos because you can do all these different things with it. But there are specific handheld devices that are coming that will make you able to watch a complete friend show. I mean, these things are multi-gigabyte hard drive capacity that you'll be able to watch your favorite shows anytime you want to, and you can have it synchronized with your set-top box. You won't be able to get those files off of that machine, I don't think, because of the controls that will be put in place for the distribution of that content. But you'll be able to get it within some secure devices that you'll be able to watch them anytime you want.
And then next, I want one of those food replicators in my home that I could just, like, you know, computer, grilled cheese sandwich, and it's done, you know.
Just like Star Trek, you know, the food replicator.
I am so ready for the future.
I want a cheeseburger.
I want the future to be now.
Yeah. These are things that we talk about between us all the time, and it's fun to talk about it with our listeners because these are things that are important to us. And if you have any other comments about this topic, please send us an email and let us know your thoughts on it too. And we'd be happy to share that with our listeners as well. And my email address is robg@webtalkguys.com. And Dana's got a terrific email address too.
Dana, D-A-N-A @webtalkguys.com. Yeah, and it's okay if you want to send us kind of a rant version of it too. We'll read it, but you have to know that we're going to be reading it on the air. So, you know, if you have a really strong opinion, don't have to be really diplomatic. Just
well, and also,
be concise, though.
You know, you can also record it as an MP3 file
and
send it to us, and we'll be happy to play it on the show.
Do that. We want to hear your voice, actually, so that would be the best. Because you know what? We're not live. We are on demand. So if
That's
you
right.
want to have your voice on the air, you're just going to have to pre-record it and get
That's
it.
That's right. And it would be terrific to get some audio from some of our listeners. Because all your computers have sound cards, and all you got to do is get a microphone.
And
most people have something like that they can use to record something.
Do it.
Send us your thoughts.
Please do. And this is the new paradigm of the radio call-in show, you know, but it's pre-recorded. Also, any of you guys who have sort of dabbled in audio blogs, we want to hear from you too. We've done a show on it recently. If you go to audioblogs.com, you can hear that show. And we played snippets of, about three different audio mm-hmm. blogs out there. We'd love permission to play your audio blog and just some interesting ramblings that you've done alone at night in front of your computer at 2 a.m. We'll put it on.
But keep it compelling, okay?
Yes.
No. Do the best you can.
Rob, that reminds me, before we go to break, I wanted to give a heads up to everyone that Web Talk Guys is sponsored by several good, generous companies out there, and we really appreciate them, want to give them some recognition. First, Compass Communications.
They are a co-location provider that's up in the Westin building up in Seattle. So go check them out there at ccom.net. They're a terrific solutions provider if you want to have a server co-located.
Another great sponsor is paybycheck.com, which is an important way to offer e-commerce on your site using checks.
And another sponsor that we have on the show is MailWiper at MailWiper.com, and they have a terrific spam filter program that works with Outlook and Outlook Express.
Sea Silver Nutrition is another sponsor, and we're using it right now. It's a great way to take your vitamins in a liquid form.
Our last sponsor is What Counts. They're a global email newsletter provider that has some terrific software that can enable you to send your newsletter out to your mailing list out there. So go check them out at whatcounts.com. Stay with us because up next we're going to have a conversation with David Fisher, who is the U.S. manager of AdWords. That's that sponsored links program over at Google. And we're going to hear about that program and how to maximize the benefits from using a pay-per-click placement in Google. So if you got a website, you can make some money. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Recognize that sound? If you're taking vitamins in a pill form, that's exactly where they're ending up. Hello, my name is Dr. David Friedman. According to the physician's desk reference, vitamins in a pill form are just 10% absorbed. So for every $100 you spend on vitamins, you are literally flushing $90 of it down the toilet. If you want to start absorbing the nutrients you swallow, you need to take a product called Sea Silver. Not only does it contain every vitamin, mineral, amino acid, and enzyme known to man, but because it's in a natural liquid form, it offers a 98% absorption. That means your body gets to keep the nutrients you swallow. Try delicious-tasting Sea Silver today. You'll feel a difference or your money back. Call 1-800-285-8963. That's 1-800-285-8963. Isn't it time you stopped flushing your vitamins down the toilet? 1-800-285-8963.
Grab a board and surf the web with those crazy Web Talk guys right here, right now.
You're back and connected with the Web Talk Guys radio show, and my name is Rob Greenlee. Remember, you can visit us online at webtalkguys.com and check out our articles, and we've got a new weblog.
Hi there, I'm Webgirl Dana. Now, sponsored links and search engines are really hot right now. So there's a whole new cottage industry developing around the success of pay-per-click placement within search engines like Google's AdWord program. We have the head of Google's AdWord program with us on the show today to take some of the mystery out of these programs and give us all a better understanding on how this new advertising medium that really anybody can use if you have a website works.
Google's AdWords sponsored links program is doing a lot of creative things with paid search engine placement, but it can be a little confusing to really understand how these types of programs work and how to get the most return for your money that you spend on advertising with a Google type program. Joining the Web Talk guys today to explain Google's AdWord program is David Fisher, who's the U.S. manager for AdWords at Google. And he has previously served as a deputy chief of staff of the U.S. Treasury Department. And prior to that, he was also an associate editor at U.S. News and World Report. David, it's great to have you on the show with us today.
Thanks. Glad to be with you, Rob.
Hey, why don't you tell us a little bit about what attracted you to Google? You have an amazing background.
Thanks. The reason I chose to come to Google, which I think is the same reason a lot of people come to the company, is first of all just real strong enthusiasm for Google and its technology. And we are at our heart a technology and a search company, and a real desire, I think, to commitment to the company's mission, which is the belief that making information out there readily accessible to the world is a worthwhile pursuit and something worth doing. So that was, I just, as a longtime user of Google, as a lot of the people who come here are, that was the first thing. And then the AdWords program that I work on, which is our advertising program, mm-hmm. one of our two advertising programs actually, was just something that as I learned more about it, was really excited about the opportunity, and I have a little bit of background in media. And on top of that, I think Google just has a real fun culture that, folks here work hard but play hard and have fun, take the work seriously but don't take ourselves too seriously, and all that just makes it a fun place to be.
David, you said you just have a little bit of background in media, but I have to point out again, you were associate editor at U.S. News and World Report, where I'm sure you guys had fun time working there too.
We did.
Now, tell me about how a person goes from the Treasury Department to U.S. News and World Report to Google. I mean, is there some synergistic relationship between all of those?
There is not. I'm a big believer in finding things that are incredibly interesting and that you have a real passion about and taking good opportunities when they come up. And so, as you mentioned, I spent time in Washington at U.S. News and World Report in Washington, D.C., and where I covered politics and economics and affairs in the city, and then went to the other side to work at the Treasury Department. And then following that, knew I wanted to come out to the West Coast, to Silicon Valley, and get into the technology space, and looked around and couldn't have ended up at a better place than Google. So it's not an obvious career path, but I certainly wouldn't trade any of these opportunities, and particularly not being at Google for any.
Yeah, let's talk about the whole concept of a pay-per-click search engine and you guys is using that as a tool here and offering it to companies out there. Why do you think that model of paid placement is becoming so successful right now? Years ago, people scoffed at the idea of paying for placement in search engines and because people felt that paying to have a listing up there kind of wasn't necessarily a positive thing for the image of the search engine. What's your thoughts on that, and why have things changed?
Sure. I think it's a terrific question. I agree with the premise of the question that I think there is a few problematic elements with the notion of being able to buy your way into the search results of a search engine. And so what we at Google do and like to be really clear about is that we have the main search results, which going to guess a lot of your listeners probably know when you just do a search on Google and you get all these results down the page, with the white background, the main results, those are our search results, and those are unbiased in any way. You can't buy your way into the listing.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there are a lot of folks out there who are interested in want their results to show up on Google, and since you can't pay pay your way into the search results were interested in figuring a way when they could get some space on the page and advertise their product. So out of that, we've created the AdWords program and advertising. So what we like to say is, well, you can't buy your way into our search results, but you can buy your way into advertising. So just to give you an example around this, I just did a search just before we got on the phone here, and I'm looking on my screen on Google where I searched for Seattle concerts because I figured I was interested in seeing what concerts might be coming to town and where I can get tickets, and I get a whole bunch of search results listing concerts, and then off on the right-hand side with a colored background and it's indicated sponsored links, which is our way of making clear to all of our users out there that this is not our search results. These are paid advertising. I also get a bunch of folks advertising Seattle concerts and online tickets and that sort of thing. And so, you know, what we're basically trying to do is give both our users and advertisers a way to reach out to people who are potentially looking for a product or service they're offering.
Tell us some background of the thought of where that would occur on the page. I know it's in the right-hand margin, and don't you have something that's along the top? Are those visible enough? Did you guys talk about where on the landscape you should put those AdWords?
There are two basic goals in mind. The first is just making it a good user experience and allowing searchers out there to find what they're looking for in a format that works well for them. So as you'll see, if you do a Google search or if you've done one before, it's a text-based result. And the reasons we do that are, first, make it as quick as possible. By doing that, you get results that are typically 1 to 2 tenths of a second. Mm-hmm. And second of all, to give you some information so you can see, if you want to click through to something, what it's about. And we wanted to create a layout that lets you see as much information as possible. I think the second key thing we do is we shade the boxes that are advertising. So they show up in some different colors, whether it's shaded green or shaded pink. But we do this to call them out and make clear, and we clearly identify them as sponsored links. Because while we do offer paid advertising, we want to make clear that there's a distinction between the paid advertising and Google's algorithm that we use to just do the unbiased search results.
One thing that's fascinating about that whole thing is that, yeah, I know when a lot of the sponsored links programs originally started, and that was even before Google, is that a lot of those links were just displayed at the top of the page, and they looked just like regular search results. And I'm sure that the effectiveness of that was probably much greater than making them look like, you know, an ad that has text in it with a colored box or whatever. And I know that's a difficult thing to balance, because you guys want to drive, you know, ROI to your advertisers, but it's got to be a difficult thing to walk that line between making it look like an ad but also making it look like search results too.
That's a great point, and I think, you know, our view at Google is that we want to go out of our way to make clear, so there's no ambiguity between what are paid advertising and what are the unbiased search results. As your question suggests, you know, all sorts of things have been tried out there on the web, and different people have taken different approaches to this. But our view is that if we make it a good user experience, so the searcher gets clear information in a way that's presented clearly, and they know what it is, so they can tell if someone's paying for it, because frankly, some people want to know that. And they can tell what are the search results that are just based on the Google search mm-hmm. algorithm that give the unbiased search results. If we make that information readily available, then that's going to create the best possible user experience, and that's always mm-hmm. our number one goal.
Sure.
David, I've actually used AdWords for promoting a website, and it's very interesting and very easy to understand the process. Why don't you start by telling us how many people have tried out and use this process, and then if you could go through sort of a brief step-by-step for those who haven't, just to show them how simple it would be to buy a word.
Sure, I'd be glad to do that. So right now we have over 100,000 advertisers with Google, which makes us certainly one of the largest, if not the largest, player out there in the space. And I think, you know, we believe that, based on our interactions with advertisers, that the reason it's been so successful in the little over a year we've been offering this is quite simply because it returns a good return on your investment.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do it? It's a pretty simple sign-up process. We say all it takes is 15 minutes to sign up and $5, which is the sign-up fee. And after that, you only pay for clicks, for traffic that's driven to your site. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But the sign-up process is you would just go to google.com and click on, there's a link at right underneath the search box that says Advertise with Us. And from there, go to the AdWords sign-up process, which, you know, you'll see it'll be pretty clear. And you literally, it takes you right to the sign-up process. So the first thing you would do is to pick some keywords that you think, and by keywords, what we basically mean are search terms. So you might say to yourself, well, what are the terms that if someone's searching on Google or on one of our partner sites that we show our ads on as well, that we think that person who's searching would be interested in my product. So, you know, just to take the example I talked about a minute ago, if I sell concert tickets in the Seattle area, well, Seattle concerts or Seattle concert tickets, those are the types of search terms I'd likely enter. And so what I would do is just enter a series of keywords, click a button, a submit button, and the next step would bring me to write an ad. And an ad simply consists of four lines of text. You can choose a budget, how much you want to spend per day. And then the next step, which is, and this is sort of key to understanding the way our program works, is it's what we call a cost per click program. What that means is you only pay when someone clicks on your ad. So let's just say create a Seattle concert ticket ad. Three people see it, but only one of them click it. Well, we're only charged for that one click in which someone clicks on our ad. And what you set is what we call a maximum CPC, which stands for cost per click. So let's just say I decide I'm willing to pay up to 50 cents for someone to click on my site. I would just set 50 cents as the cost per click, maximum cost per click. Typically, you may well end up paying less than the 50 cents, but what you're telling us is, and I'm happy to talk about how that works a little later, but what that means is that 50 cents is the most you'll ever pay to drive someone to your site. And from there, and basically you just enter your contact information and a credit card. And as I said, at the end, you're charged, at the very end of the sign-up process, you're charged $5. And at that point, within a matter of minutes, your ad is up and running on Google. From then on, you're only going to pay when someone clicks on your ad. You know, it's actually that simple. So people really can get started in 15 minutes or less.
We have David Fisher on the line. He's the U.S. manager for AdWords at Google. More in a moment. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Recognize that sound? If you're taking vitamins in a pill form, that's exactly where they're ending up. Hello, my name is Dr. David Friedman. According to the physician's desk reference, vitamins in a pill form are just 10% absorbed. So for every $100 you spend on vitamins, you are literally flushing $90 of it down the toilet. If you want to start absorbing the nutrients you swallow, you need to take a product called Sea Silver. Not only does it contain every vitamin, mineral, amino acid, and enzyme known to man, but because it's in a natural liquid form, it offers a 98% absorption. That means your body gets to keep the nutrients you swallow. Try delicious tasting Sea Silver today. You'll feel a difference or your money back. Call 1-800-285-8963. That's 1-800-285-8963. Isn't it time you stopped flushing your vitamins down the toilet? 1-800-285-8963.
It's Web Talk Guys Radio. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Web Girl Dana.
We're having a conversation with David Fisher, who's the U.S. manager of AdWords at Google. And we're talking about Google's AdWords sponsored links program and how to maximize the benefits from using a pay-per-click placement. Let's talk a little bit about where you guys are right now in the development of the AdWords program. And how your program has kind of changed over the last 2 years. You know, I know you guys started out with a certain model, and now you guys have kind of evolved into something else here. What has been that process, and why have you guys made the modifications you've made over the last 2 years?
Mm-hmm. Well, the focus, the real thing we're trying to focus on with the AdWords program and in terms of the modifications we've made over the last couple of years have really been around results and generating that positive return on investment, because that's really the focus for us and for our advertisers, is making this, making AdWords a program that you know that if you're spending $10 a day with us, it's going to generate $20 or $15 or more than that, but generate some positive return for you. And so we've really focused on how do we drive a program that creates a positive value for our advertisers. So one big change was originally this program was a cost per impression program, meaning you were charged every time your ad appeared. And as I just discussed, we changed that a little over a year ago, and it's now a cost per click program. So you're only paying when someone clicks on your site. And the logic there is obvious, that as an advertiser, I only want to pay for my ad if it's actually having leading to some potential result. It's actually driving someone to my website. And once they're there, I can get a sale out of them or do whatever, you know, drive whatever action I'm trying to drive. So that's sort of one big concept. I think a second one that's related to that is, as I said earlier, we're really focused at Google on the user experience. So we want to create a positive experience. If you're searching for something, all the information on the page is relevant to what you're looking for. So what we've done with the AdWords program is actually figure out a way to reward relevance and to try and make sure that the most relevant ads are the ones that are showing up on the page. So the way we do that is, as I mentioned earlier, you set a cost per click that you're willing to pay for your ad.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually rank the ads on the page to decide which ad is going to appear first and which is second and so on, we actually multiply the cost per click, how much you bid, how much you say you're willing to pay,
mm-hmm.
times what's called the click-through rate. And what the click-through rate is quite simply the number of times your ad is clicked on divided by the number of times it appears. So let's say my ad appears 100 times and it gets 20 clicks. Well, my click-through rate is 20%. By factoring in the click-through rate to the ranking, what we're basically saying is if you're getting a higher click-through rate, then that's our way, that's our user's way of saying, hey, I find this ad really relevant, and therefore what we're going to do is basically reward you for having an ad that's more relevant than someone else so you can actually pay less and appear in a higher spot if you have a higher click-through rate. And so we're really focused on trying to create that experience. And the view is if users are finding what they're looking for and start to find, as they have, that AdWords ads really help them find products and services they're looking for, then they're going to rely more on the ads going forward, and that's a good thing for the advertisers as well.
So you actually pay less as more people click on your ad, and it actually goes up in the display on the page just based on how many times it's clicked on, it sounds like.
Right. So let me just give you an example, Rob. Let's say you and I were both advertising, just to stay with the same analogy, we both sold concert tickets in the Seattle area, and you had an ad that had a 1%, you were paying 50 cents per click, and you had a 5% click-through rate. So you would have, basically if you multiply those two together, you get 2.5. Well, let's just say I'm bidding twice as much as you. I have a $1 cost per click, but my click-through rate's only 2%. So you multiply those two together, you get 2. So basically what that means is you could pay half as much as me, but you would rank ahead of me in the results. And so that really is rewarding relevant advertising.
Now, what really defines and gets that relevancy? Is it the keywords that you're using on the page? Is it the enticement in the ad itself? Or what's the model that you're seeing that's working in that?
It's a great question. It's a combination of those things. I would say the first key is to choose relevant keywords. There's a couple ways to do that. I think a first hint that I would offer is think specific. There's a tendency to that we see this, most new advertisers come in and think, well, I really want people to see my ad, and so I'm going to pick a general keyword. So maybe I'm just going to pick tickets if I sell tickets because, mm-hmm. Why not? You know, someone might be searching for tickets in the Seattle area and just happen to enter tickets. But what we actually find is those things, really general keywords, perform less well. And the more specific you can be, the more the better off you're going to be and the better return you're going to get. Because basically what you're doing is you're only targeting the traffic, the searchers who are truly interested in what you're offering. So think specific is one. A second piece of advice is really to monitor how you're doing, and we actually allow you to log in anytime, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, into your account and check your results and make changes. So if you log in, if you choose 5 keywords, and let's say you log in a day later and you see that you can get results for each keyword, so maybe 4 of them are working really well and have click-through rates over 3%, which is a pretty healthy click-through rate, but one of them is lagging behind and only has less than 1% click-through rate, well, then you'd simply just go in and say and turn off that one that's not working. So that's another important one. And then a final piece I would highlight is just the ad text itself. Two keys here. One, really highlight the benefits to your product or service. So if you offer free shipping, if you have won some award for your customer satisfaction level or something like that, if there's certain benefits that you want to that really you think are key selling points, highlight those. Then a second thing, a second feature of the AdWords system that I would point out is we actually allow you to set up multiple ads. So let's say for your Seattle ticket selling tickets online, you could set up two different versions of an ad around for a single set of keywords, and we would just rotate those ads. So each one would show 50% of the time. And then a day or two after you sign up, you could log into your account, see which one is getting a higher click-through rate, because it just turns out, you know, as anyone who's done it, the marketing knows that certain words just do better in terms of attracting people and getting type of response, attracting customers. And so you just keep the one that's working better than the other one and turn the other one off.
Yeah, I've got one comment, and it just popped in my head as you were talking about it, but it relates to PageRank. And I know this is a little bit off the topic of the Sponsored Links program, but I was just wondering, if you run an ad in your AdWords program, does that help you in your PageRank?
No, it doesn't. Actually, the search results and the advertising are completely unrelated, mm-hmm. and we like to say Google is sort of a church and state separation there.
Okay.
And so it's not going to have any effect at all on your search results, whether you advertise or not.
Oh, okay. Let's talk a little bit about your AdWords program in relation to some of your partners. Now, I know you guys have partnered with Earthlink and AOL to distribute your AdWords program. Is that program different with your partners out there than what you're doing off of the Google.com site?
It's not different. It's just as on Google, if you do a search, that's going to generate AdWords results alongside the search results. If you do a search on any of those other sites on AOL on Ask Jeeves, let's say we had signed up for Seattle concert tickets. If we do that same search on Ask Jeeves, if I'm running in AdWords, my ad will show up there, likewise on AOL and so on. And basically what we do is we take the same advertising, the same method of using the click-through rate and the cost per click, and we share that advertising and basically send that advertising to our partner sites, and so you can show up there. I think one important difference to know is that whereas on Google we show up to 8 AdWords ads on a page, on some of our partner sites they might show a different number per page. So, for example, to show up on the first page of AOL search results, you have to be in the top 4, sometimes 3. It depends sometimes the way they show it. And on Ask Jeeves, we actually show as many as 7 ads on the first page. So sometimes people sign up and want to make sure that, for example, they're near the top of our ranking to show up on the first page of AOL search results. So in that case, it's important that the combination of your click-through rate and how much you're bidding on your cost per click is getting you near the top.
Pretty much any business can advertise using AdWords, but are there any specific kind of businesses that are really seeing it really helped them?
I think the ones that work particularly well are direct response type businesses, you know, as opposed to a branding type situation where someone is going to search online, whether it be on Google or on one of the partner sites we just talked about. They're searching for something because they want to buy, you know, mm-hmm. a product or service. So whether it's I'm searching for a new pair of running shoes or to buy tickets or to buy a new modem or even a computer, you know, something like that, you know that there are consumers out there who are doing their research and then making their purchase decisions online. Those are the type of businesses that we see have a really strong results within the AdWords program, because they can simply pick the right search terms. And so just to take a different example, if I'm buying a new pair of running shoes and I know that I always buy Nike running shoes and I want to get a new pair, well, if someone searches on Nike running shoes and I sell those, you know, then that's going to be a good return. I can show my ad right there that says all sizes and brands, overnight delivery. Well, that's usually a pretty powerful pull, because, you know, if someone's searching on that, then it's pretty likely that they're going to want to buy them. And if you're offering it to them right there, those are exactly the types of businesses that we see
that's
work
good.
Really well with this program.
Well, now, David, you mentioned earlier how you can basically self-administer your keywords, change it at a moment's notice. And I just want to make a comment. I find it strangely addictive and a lot of fun to sort of just keep watching and looking at the click-through results and changing. And I mean, is this a phenomenon that you've seen? Have you given it its own term?
We haven't. It's a good question, though. Maybe we should come up with a term for that. But I mean, in addition to being addictive and and hopefully fun in some cases, it also means real money, which is why which is why we really encourage people to do it. And so just checking in and making small changes here and there, but to really perfect what you're doing is gonna, you know, ultimately help make your advertising as powerful as possible and make you the most money. And one other thing I should have mentioned earlier that just dawned on me is you know, along the whole lines of giving the advertiser control, as much control as possible over their account. You know, I talked about our partners out there who we also show the ads on. Again, that's something that overwhelmingly our advertisers choose to do. But again, if you decide that you do only want to show on Google, you have the option to do that. And so we really try and put as much control as possible in the hands of the advertiser, because ultimately they know their business better than we do.
Also, what you're saying is that a advertiser can select, I want to run my ad at AOL.
What they can do is say either I want to run on just Google or I want to get Google's whole network. And there's one other actually new feature that I wanted to mention to your listeners, which is what we call our content-targeted advertising, which is something we've just started in the last month or two, which is, in addition, we take the same concept of when someone searches on an ad, but we apply it to content sites. So just to give you an example, and again, to stay with the analogy that we've been using, let's just say that there's a site there in the Seattle area that talks about concerts and shows and the theater in the Seattle area. What we do is apply Google technology to that page and figure out what is this page about, basically what are the keywords that are most important on this page, and then we can show AdWords advertising. So we could trigger, if it's talking about upcoming concerts in the Seattle area, well, we can figure that out and then trigger ads that talk about Seattle concerts. And again, that's another option that AdWords advertisers have. So in addition to Google and the other partner sites around the search space, you can also do our content advertising and again, show your ads to a really relevant audience who's looking for information that's relevant to your ads.
So when a person basically signs up for that content relationship, who actually sets the keywords that pull up on that site itself? Is that done by you guys by analyzing their site, or does the actual site owner itself that displays the sponsored links actually set those words?
We actually do that. So the same way, if you think about same way when you type in a search into Google and get results that are relevant to you, it's because we have a technology that enables us to look at all these 3 billion sites across the internet and figure out what they're about. Well, we use that same type of technology to figure out what these sites are about and then what's the right advertising to show on that site.
So is that a revenue share with the actual site owner itself that displays those? Is that the model?
That can be a model, but basically in those cases, yeah, we work out some sort of business relationship with our partners and have some arrangement where we share the revenue.
We have David Fisher on the line. He's the U.S. manager for AdWords at Google. More in a moment. This is Web Talk Guys Radio.
Come on.
Recognize that sound? If you're taking vitamins in a pill form, that's exactly where they're ending up. Hello, my name is Dr. David Friedman. According to the physician's desk reference, vitamins in a pill form are just 10% absorbed. So for every $100 you spend on vitamins, you are literally flushing $90 of it down the toilet. If you want to start absorbing the nutrients you swallow, you need to take a product called Sea Silver. Not only does it contain every vitamin, mineral, amino acid, and enzyme known to man, but because it's in a natural liquid form, it offers a 98% absorption. That means your body gets to keep the nutrients you swallow. Try delicious-tasting Sea Silver today. You'll feel a difference or your money back. Call 1-800-285-8963. That's 1-800-285-8963. Isn't it time you stopped flushing your vitamins down the toilet? 1-800-285-8963.
Web Talk Radio is back. I'm Rob Greenlee, and I'm here with Web Girl Dana. We're having a conversation with David Fisher, who's the U.S. manager of AdWords at Google, and we're talking about Google's AdWords sponsored links program and how to maximize the benefits from using a pay-per-click placement. why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the kind of hidden secrets? And I know you've talked a little bit about them earlier in our conversation, but are there any that we've not talked about that an advertiser really needs to know to really maximize?
Sure. Yeah, we've talked about a few of them in terms of, you know, testing multiple ad versions of an ad to figure out what particular words work the best, and, you know, trying to target your keywords more narrowly and then checking how they're doing. Another important one that that I want to take this opportunity to highlight is choosing what we call your landing page. And by that I mean, if you set up an ad, which page, and someone clicks on it, where does that direct the person? And so, you know, there's a bunch of options, but to pick up the Nike running shoes example that I used earlier, if I search for Nike running shoes and see an ad that's offering Nike running shoes and I click on that, well, obviously, based on my search, I'm going to be wanting to be taken to a page that actually sells Nike running shoes, or better yet, yeah, if I've searched on a particular model, that takes me to the page that sells that style of shoe. So mm-hmm. I can, if I know that's what I want, I can purchase it. Sometimes a common mistake we see for new advertisers to make is they want to drive a lot of traffic to their site overall and educate people about it. So maybe they take me, maybe it's just a sporting goods page and it takes me to their homepage, and from mm-hmm. there I have to click on shoes and then on running shoes and then on Nike running shoes. What we basically find is that if you make it harder on the user, even if it's just making them click a few more times, they're more likely to just go back and click on another ad and try and find what they're looking for more quickly. So take the person from your ad to the real relevant page to what they're looking for.
Yeah, so if they have a page that's maybe talking about running shoes, maybe take them to a group page versus a specific running shoe. Would that be a proper analogy there?
Well, I would say actually, again, take them, you know, depending on what the search term is. If it's just running shoes, then take them to the general running shoes.
Yeah,
but if it's Nike running shoes, take them to the Nike running shoes. If it's Adidas, sure, take them to that page. But take them, get down as specific as possible to the particular ad you're running on. So maybe, you know, that's another good, actually brings me to another good tip, which is you often want to set up different ads, what we call in AdWords ad groups, for these different mm-hmm. types of brands. So maybe you would have one ad that highlights Adidas running shoes and takes you directly to the Adidas running shoe page, and another ad that focuses on Nike running shoes and takes you to the Nike running shoes page, and so on. But again, getting down to that, making it as specific and relevant as possible, and that's really going to generate the best possible return on investment, is our experience.
One of the big things about doing anything with the search engines relates to the use of keywords. And I know when we talk about keywords, we're probably not doing all of our listeners a service. We should probably be referring to keyword phrases, because that's really what really works out there. How do you guys recommend that a advertiser do research on what keyword phrases are going to be the most effective for them?
Good question, and I think I think your overall point is a good one that I would highlight. I think we talk about keywords and keyword phrases, and I think maybe people who aren't so familiar with this space might, you know, just think of it as a search term, but just know we're all talking about the same thing when we use these different terms for it. The best possible research, I think, or at least as a starting point, is to do one of two things, or ideally both things. First of all, ask yourself, if I was a consumer looking for the product or service I'm selling, mm-hmm. what would I be likely to search? And just sort of try and think like a consumer and do that as step one. Step two is then actually go ahead and do the searches you're thinking about advertising for and see what the results actually are, because sometimes you realize, well, I think this might be a relevant term, but if you search it and you realize that two-thirds of the actual search results aren't really relevant to what you're looking for, then then what you're selling, then that's probably a good sign that maybe that's not the right search term, and you want to find one that when you search it, most of the results, if not all of the results, have something to do with the product or service you're offering, and then you can say, okay, well, that's probably the right keyword for me to choose. I think a second thing that I would highlight is that you can actually, within the Google system, use different types of what we call keyword matching, but what it quite simply means is whether you want to show up anytime someone does a search that just has the words Nike and running and shoes in the search, or whether you only want to show up for a single search phrase, Nike running shoes, or just Seattle concert tickets versus any search term with the words concert tickets in it, and we basically, Google has a series of options that are laid out in more detail on our site, but that allow you to choose whether you want to use really a narrow approach or a more broad approach to the way that we figure out if the keyword search should trigger your ad or not.
Speaking of the display of keywords on a search result, what is to prevent a user, let's say, out there just repeatedly clicking on your ad that's displayed in the browser? I would think a lot of advertisers might be scared of that. And do you guys have technology that helps keep that from being a problem?
We do. And that's the problem you're talking about is what we refer to as click spam. Because if someone is spamming you by clicking repeatedly on your ad, and we have a quite complicated click spam technology that basically protects against that. Mm-hmm. And if we see something like that happening, you won't be charged for it. And, you know, for obvious reasons, I don't want to go into too many details
yeah.
about how it works.
Exactly.
Because we're trying to prevent it. But we're certainly very well aware of that and want to make sure advertisers have a good experience and don't suffer from that sort of behavior.
Now, do you guys have any guidelines on ad content or types of sites that can't use the AdWords program?
We have a series of policies. I mean, generally, we're pretty wide open and flexible. There, certainly any products that are against the law. Sometimes, you know, different countries have different laws, and this is a truly international program where you can basically advertise anywhere around the world, and you can choose to target particular countries or particular speakers of particular languages. And so, we're certainly work to be sensitive to that and enforce laws. There are certain products we don't offer. We don't allow advertising for firearms or that sort of thing. But, our experience is that most people who try to advertise with us are able to have a positive experience doing so.
So are you guys growing this program, like in Europe and in Asia as well?
We are. AdWords program is truly global. And, you know, we have a presence throughout Europe and in Asia. Our experience has been that that those places, you know, we talked earlier about the difference between a cost per click model, which AdWords mm-hmm. is, and a more typical cost per impression model. And so, you know, in Europe, I think they're 6 months to a year behind just in terms of learning about bringing this sort of cost per click model and getting advertisers, marketers, and consumers educated about it. But, we're finding a lot of success with it. I think we're just, whereas here we're pretty ramped up and running with this program. We're getting there in Europe and certainly in Asia as well. Have a presence in Japan and other major countries throughout Asia as well.
So, are there different expectations over there in those countries for sponsored links? I mean, is there cultural issues, or are you involved in that aspect of it?
It's interesting, actually. I manage the U.S. side of this, and mm-hmm. I have a counterpart of mine who does this internationally. And there are all sorts of across countries. I talked earlier about some of the policy issues. So there's certain countries where it's either illegal or just not a good idea culturally to sell certain products or services. And so we try to be sensitive to that and make sure we're doing the right thing in a way that's going to work for residents of particular countries. But the model is really staying the same, throughout, and it's just a matter of educating people and getting them familiar with the program. But we're really enthusiastic about this and feel like it's something that we're seeing success with, certainly in the U.S. and in Europe and in Asia and elsewhere. And so we're quite enthusiastic about continuing to roll it out across the globe.
So what is on the horizon for Google AdWords? Are you guys working on anything new that will bring into play other types of advertising elements or anything?
Sure. I think we're always focused on how can we create an even better experience for our advertisers and generally for our users. And so the content targeted advertising I talked about earlier mm-hmm. opens up a huge new opportunity for advertisers to have their ads shown on pages in a way before that was just unavailable to them, where if you were to try manually to figure out each page where someone's ads might be relevant, the web is an enormous place with billions and billions of pages. You could never do it, but using our technology, we're able to bring that relevance. So we're really excited about the content targeted advertising side of things. And then I think, we're always focusing on how to make the advertiser experience even better one and rolling out new tools within the AdWords system. We talked earlier about, how it can get addictive and fun to go in there and modify your keywords. And we're trying to figure out more ways when we can help you figure out what are the best possible keywords, how to refine your advertising, make it the best possible experience. So our expectation is, you know, we think we have a good product, but we always want to make it better. And so I think you'll continue to see new features rolling out, you know, in the weeks ahead, and then continuing, you know, I think a trickle over the months ahead as well.
David, it was fantastic having you on the show with us. We certainly wish continued success to Google and Google's AdWords program.
Thanks very much. I enjoyed the chance to speak with you.
Yeah, it was terrific. Check out the Google AdWords program, and you can go to adwords.google.com and just leave the www out of there, and you'll get right to it. We've been having a conversation with David Fisher, who is the U.S. manager of AdWords at Google, and we've been hearing about Google's AdWords sponsored links program and how to maximize the benefits from using a pay-per-click placement in Google.
Well, that brings us to the end of our show, Rob. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to us the last hour.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
Please remember to come back next week for new coverage of your digital lifestyle.
Remember, we have a website at webtalkguys.com, and we have a lot of old shows up there that have some terrific content. Also, great articles that are written by Dana that are up there, too. You can go check out about all sorts of internet-related topics. We'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.